Pete Felcia, 1,000 welcomes to the Village Oak Tree for July 24, 2024. I'm your host, Terrence O'Donnell, and I thank you for joining me once again. Today, I have a young lady from right in my backyard. She's running for a local school board and also involved in several other things to try and do a little better in her community and the area at large. So please welcome Miss Angela Fontaine, and we're going to talk about what's going on in our backyards. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, well, it's, as we know, since we live in the same neighborhood, it's weather's a little dodgy. Yeah.
It's hot and rainy. So hope the rain's not cooling things off either.
No. I keep making the jokes this summer because of all the high humidity. It's like, back in the 1970s, I did a lot of traveling around the Far East, the jungles of the South Pacific, and this is kind of what that reminds me of. High humidity, lots of sun, and you don't want to spend a lot of time outside.
Exactly.
But I mean, I've been here almost 4 years now, and this is probably the hottest, most humid summer I've spent.
Agreed. I've been here for, well, most of my life, but for the last stint about 15 years, and I feel like it gets hotter and hotter every year.
Yeah, and they want to deny global warming. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Well, you know, that's a whole nother
data
thing.
Is data, you know. Data
exactly.
Is data.
Exactly. I mean, I'm sorry. You're going to call all these famous scientists liars? No.
Yeah. I mean, you don't even have to be a scientist to observe it, right?
Well,
like we just said.
I keep telling people, you want to know what the weather is, look out the window. You know, I'm sorry.
You know, that's a good question. Have you seen snow since you've been here?
A little bit. But
yeah, it used to snow all the time.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, when wow. I was growing up, it would snow. We would have school closed down for a week sometimes.
Wow.
And we haven't had a snow like that in as far as I can remember. And if it does snow, it doesn't stick. You know, it's a very wet snow. So every year, you know, I don't think it snowed at all last year, maybe a little bit, but we haven't really seen any.
Well, we had that one brief little flaky stuff in December, I remember.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It basically just covered the grass a little bit for about 3 or 4 hours in the backyard.
Yeah.
I think that's the only snow we had all winter, I remember.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Now, the year before that, we had about, like you said, the real wet, sticky, ugly, icy stuff. I mean, we actually got 4 or 5, 6 inches, you know, and I went mm-hmm. and shoveled out the driveway. I think about the same the year before that. But mm-hmm. so I'm thinking this is probably, you know, it's like I told my wife, I said, this is probably the new norm. Better get used to it. This is what our summers are going to be like.
Oof. And my air conditioning's been out in my car for about a month and a half, and I keep taking to get it fixed, and I can't figure out what's wrong with it. So it's in the shop again today. Oh, I have a rental, and driving that rental around with air conditioning has been a godsend.
Well, you know, I've had a lot of hats in my life. One of them being a mechanic.
Oh wow!
I was an internal combustion mechanic for like 20 years.
Got tired
of busting my knuckles. And decided to do something a little bit different. So I got into air conditioning and refrigeration.
Okay.
So part of that is so far part of that was fixing car air conditioners.
Yeah.
And, you know, over the process, you know, I did that for nearly 20 years. But I mean, I did other things. I mean, I started out, you know, doing it right after I got out of the Army. You know, I retired from the Army at the end of 2004. And I needed something to do. So I already had my licenses and stuff to get into, you know, refrigeration stuff. So I started my own business. So in the process of that, I learned a lot of things. So I was doing home air conditioning, which living way up in northeastern Maine, there's not a lot of call for home air conditioning. but I did some commercial air conditioning repairs. So I had some customers that had stores at the local mall. Not that it was much of a mall, but they had rooftop air conditioners. Once in a while, they call me to fix one of them. But I did a lot of, I got into doing a lot of cars, but I did cars and I did commercial trucks. I mean, there's not a lot of difference other than they're just bigger systems as far as it goes. Of course, I had to have special tools to do the big rigs like the Freightliners and the Peterbilts, but still systems are the same. So, I mean, you're saying about your car not working. Well, it's one of two things. One, you got a leak and all the gas is leaking out and they haven't found the leak yet.
That's it.
Well, there you go. Okay.
Well, they first said it was the compressor. They said that whole rocks kicked up and put holes in the compressor. So they changed the compressor. And then a day later, it was broken again. So last night they did they put dye so they can see where the leak is coming out.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's what they should have done in the first place.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Just to give you an idea of some of the things that I used to fix. So I had a lady to show. I used to do work on cars out of a friend's garage. Well, I say friend's garage. He had his own car repair business. But he wasn't licensed to do air conditioning. So anytime a customer would bring him a car that needed air conditioning fixed, he'd call me up and say, hey, you know, I got somebody's car in the garage. You know, can you come do it? You know, when I go out there and the first thing I do is leak check. You know, it's the very first thing I do is a leak check. Because just to give you an example, all cars, and I don't care if it's big or large, they have a little electric sensor in them. If the gas pressure gets below a certain point, the compressor's not going to come on.
Right.
It's designed to do that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this whole business of somebody kicking up rocks and putting oil in your compressor, no.
Well, luckily, because of that, they were able to say it was damage done to the vehicle. So my insurance paid for it, but they didn't fix the problem. They didn't, you know, so they said, well, it'll be $100 and some for a diagnostic. And I said, you already diagnosed it and you didn't diagnose it correctly. So I'm not paying for that again.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, yeah, you know, finally putting dye in the system. So here's, generally speaking, there's a couple, how old's the car?
It's a 2019.
Oh, it's not that old then. Okay. Mm-mm. I mean, I say that only because I used to work on really, really, really old cars that still had R12 systems in them, which was outlawed like 30 years ago. But I used to have guys who would come up and say, hey, my car air conditioner's not working. And they'd have this 1990 something Cadillac or whatever, you know. And I'm like, no, I can't fix that because you got to change out the whole system. You're not allowed to use that kind of gas anymore. It's against the law. Oh, no, I don't want to go through all of that. Can you just bump it as in add some gas? I said, no, because you can't buy R12 gas. Okay. What don't you understand? You know, but I used to get that all the time, but it goes back to what you're saying. If the rocks did, you know, it's not unheard of for rocks to come up, but generally speaking, you have two, they look like radiators. Look at, you know what a radiator on a car looks like, right?
Yep.
Well, there's two parts of your air conditioning system, and there's two different radiator style cooling parts. Mm-hmm. And it's not unheard of to have rocks come up underneath the front of your car and punch a hole in your condenser or you know, worst case scenario, you got a hole in your evaporator because that's usually up in your dashboard. But the condenser coil is mounted right alongside where your water radiator is on the front of the car. Okay. And again, it's not unusual for rocks to come up and punch a hole in those things. But again, if that had happened, you'd think they would have told you that. Oh yeah, you got a hole in your condenser. We got to put a new one in. Mm-hmm. Instead of lying to you and say, oh no, your compressor's out.
Yeah. Well, maybe they did say condenser. You know, I'm not a car. Cars are not back before they became all computers on wheels. I did change my old oil. I've changed little parts here and there back when I drove an 82 Ford pickup truck when I was in high school. But now I drive a hybrid. I open up the hood. I have no idea what's going on. Just bring it to a shop.
Right. No, I'm like that too. I mean, no, don't get me wrong. I don't get into the electronics. I can't, you know what I mean? You have to be licensed and certified. You can't even buy parts for that stuff without having the right certifications anymore. So I'm like you, even though I know what's underneath the hood, I know where all the pieces and parts and what they are, I don't touch them.
Gotcha. Yeah. No, same.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just the way it is. And with the EPA stuff being what it is on oil changes, I don't even do my own oil changes anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I still used to do that not that long ago, but only because my friend Louie had a garage and I could take my used oil over and dump it in his tank. Well, you know, those days are gone.
Yeah. I have a friend who has a garage and I'm pretty sure he would let me change my oil there. But like I said, I don't even know if I know where the filter is. I could look it up, but I don't know if there's other things. I have no idea.
Well, truthfully, there isn't. It's just the idea that you have to know somebody nowadays, because you're not allowed to just dispose of your own oil. You have to take a licensed, certified, recycling place or so on. And like I said, if you don't know somebody, you're pretty much toast. So I don't know anybody anymore. Yeah. But that's part of life. I mean,
yeah, you're right.
I grew up on a farm, a very, very poor farm where we did everything for ourselves. Mm-hmm. I went to the military long before the internet was even an internet. Well, nobody ever heard of the internet. Cell phones were non-existent back those days. Mm-hmm. So everything was old school. And of course, like through the decades, I kind of got graduated into stuff. I mean, 1987, I showed up for work and they sat me down at this desk and there was this one-eyed monster staring at me. And he said, "This is called a computer. You will learn how to do this." I'm like, "What? It's a what? You want me to do what?" Yeah, that was my introduction to computers. You will learn this. That's how military is. You know.
Yep.
So awesome. I went from there. But I took to it like a duck, like a duck in water. So it was good. And that's another career that I developed after I was no longer able to fix appliances and climb up on roofs anymore. So I took all my IT skills that I had learned on my own and with a little bit of education and parlayed that into some certifications. And lo and behold, you're now an IT technician. Oh, good. Let's go make some money.
Nice. Nice. Awesome. Yeah,
then I ended up retiring from the state of Virginia, after doing that for a while.
Okay.
So it's like anything else, you move on. I don't know how to quit.
Yeah. And now you're here. So and
now I'm doing this. Well, I get to work from home doing this.
What got me into coaching, because it's what I do for work. I own a business. And what I started doing was career transition. So people not knowing how to change from job to job and not realizing how their skills kind of shift. And you can translate your skills into doing different things. Also, what kind of brain do you have? Are you a more analytical person? Are you a more hands-on person? You could be a teacher, but how does that translate into other roles? Or you could be an IT person. How does it translate into other roles? So I support, not so much anymore. I still do a little bit of that, but supporting people in being a professional like you are and moving from industry to industry to industry and being able to roll with the punches, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of push come to shove. I did a lot of things. I mean, I even drove a long haul truck for a couple of years just to try to get my head together for a while. But like anything else, that industry was pretty sad. They didn't care. You were just a number, you're just a robot behind the wheel. They didn't care. So that got old quickly. That's part of the reason why I went back to school.
A lot of my friends during the pandemic were bartenders and musicians and then COVID hit and a lot of them became truck drivers because they needed to make money. And that was an industry that really needed to keep going. It couldn't can't just not have trucks. So, and to this day, they're like, I'm making better money. I have insurance. Cause when a lot of my friends are in the music and art scene and they're living project to project or they're on tour and they're barely making any money. So, it's good to see them at least have an industry that they could, fall back on. That's, they don't care about you, but it's not going away. And sometimes that's the most important thing when somebody's looking for work, because industries are going away, well, not industries, but jobs are going away. Jobs. So what can somebody do that can be something stable moving forward? But you're absolutely right. It's definitely not the most, they don't do professional development. They're not, they don't really care about individuals. They just want the product to get from point A to point B and that's about it. Right.
Well, things are a lot different. I mean, I drove back in the 90s long before DOT was a big thing, but companies were not doing digital stuff anymore, back then. Mm-hmm. So paper logs were still the rule. And so, I won't kind of, get myself in trouble, but let's just put it this way. The bosses knew that. And so they exploited that and in a big way. It was up to the people driving the trucks to stay out of trouble. Cause if you did get in trouble, they wouldn't stand behind you. So that was the downside of the industry. Of course, nowadays everything's digital. Guy gets behind the wheel. He's automatically clocked in with his onboard computer. His hours are kept track of and so on. It's all digital. So he, driver really would have to do something really radical to get away with it anymore. Mm-hmm. But the downside is your mileages probably are not as like they used to be, and still getting paid by the mile. You're not getting paid if the wheels aren't rolling.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a catch 22. I read a lot of stories here the last year or so, as far as the industry goes, and yeah, you can make a stable living, but you're still just barely getting there. Mm-hmm. Okay. You're not mm-hmm. making a ton of money. Not like the old.
Yeah. Ones. Unless you own your own rig.
Unless you own your own rig. And then that has its own issues.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah. You know, and be honest with you, it goes back to what you were saying earlier. You know, on a broader view across the country, industries are morphing, changing. A lot of mm-hmm. people are losing their jobs. There's been a lot of layoffs, especially in the tech mm-hmm. industry here lately.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I don't know about here in Richmond. You may know more about that than I do, but I do know that out west, it's getting really bad.
Mm-hmm. You know, Richmond is like in this bubble. Like, we've never really had the effects of. Well, I don't know if you've noticed, I'm a renter and rent prices have skyrocketed, but our economy doesn't take the hit that other areas take. Hmm. We have, I think it was just voted one of the best cities to move to or something by CNN.
Well, that explains all the places I'm seeing from everywhere.
Yeah. Well, people are moving here in droves. You know, all these in Richmond, all of these in Richmond and surrounding areas, apartment complexes are popping up. Housing yep. prices have doubled or quadrupled in some cases. And it's, you know, we have a couple big companies here. Some medical device companies. We have Capital One's here. Capital One does do, you know, they'll do layoffs and then hire layoffs. And hire. Yeah. So, but there's also other banks and there's other places for people to work. So our unemployment rate isn't comparable to other places. But even during the pandemic, even during the recession in 2008, I lived in Phoenix at the time, and the house that I owned went from, we paid like $175,000 for it. It was a little rancher, and overnight it went down to like 30 grand.
Whoa.
Richmond didn't see that type of slump. Yes, wow. there was still a housing crisis all over the country, but Richmond didn't see that kind of slump. And now our housing market is booming.
Oh, yeah.
Well, for sellers, not for buyers, right? Right. Interest rates have returned to, you know, I think they're at like 8-9% or something. We're never going to see those 2%, 3% interest rates. I don't think ever again. But you know, that was a fluke.
Right.
That's never happened. So I think things are bottoming out, hopefully, because I am going to try to buy a house in the next couple of years. I'm waiting for things to kind of settle down before I do that, though.
Well, there's some truth to that. Okay. So unlike anything else, I watch a lot of things all of the time. So I'll give you an example. I moved here at the end of 2020, and I got in on right at the very beginning of all this stuff. So I found, you know, we kind of stumbled on our house, and it was an estate sale. Basically, the previous owner either passed away or went to a nursing home and was never going to come back. So the children were selling the house. So they had put it up, you know, at then market price, which it was, you know, right there. It was right smack where all the people that know these things and people I was working with told me that a house like this should be priced at. And I'm like, okay. Well, it needed a lot of remodeling. That's one of the reasons why I think it got passed over quite a bit. And so we latched onto it. We had sold a house in Texas and, you know, it was oversold basically. So this developing company paid us way over market price. We took the money and brought it here and remodeled this house. So after all of that, of course, like you said, we've watched the housing prices in our area go right through the roof. So now a house that's smaller than mine, square footage wise, is brand spanking new. I mean, it's one of those cookie cutter houses in one of these new subdivisions. Mm-hmm. They're selling out here on the west side of Richmond for upwards of right a half a million dollars right now.
Mm-hmm.
And these are like, you know, typical, what I call cookie cutter subdivision, 1800 square foot houses, 3 to 4 bedrooms, mostly 3 bedrooms usually, because that's usually this, what I call standard layouts. But as I said, we know some people that just purchased something and, you know, it was priced at just a little over $500,000. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, well, that goes along with what you're saying. Now, rent prices are, you know, over the top everywhere. Yeah. I have a young son that lives in East Tennessee, and he was telling me over there, they're having the same problem with a lot of people coming from the West Coast, driving the prices up there. Rents are through the roof. People who live there all their lives can't afford to rent anything.
Yep. That's Richmond.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's Richmond. That's,
well, it's, yeah. And it just goes, and you know, the thing is we experienced the same thing when we left Central Texas, you know, 4 years ago. It was just starting out there. They were, you know, they had already been expanding subdivisions like crazy before 2020, but the prices weren't skyrocketing that bad. They were building them, but they weren't pricing them out of reach. But then all of a sudden, after, you know, after that, everything went through the roof. We had a friend, a young friend, she bought a house and it was a little overpriced to what it, from what things used to be. And then they tried to sell it. And then, you know, the market went right through the roof. And the biggest problem they had was the real estate agent would say, well, no, it's worth this now because of the boom, but they couldn't find anybody who wanted to pay the price.
Well, then it's not worth that.
Yeah. You know, the idea is that real estate agents were trying to cash in and they were a little ahead of the game. So it was an issue. And it, and that, you know, that happens as well. A lot of times I find that sometimes these markets are a bit overinflated because certain people want to make money.
You know? Oh yeah. You know, money makes the world go round. And in Richmond, you know, the Northern Virginia economy is, Northern Virginia is much more expensive than Virginia. Oh, yeah. And when the pandemic hit, a lot of people started working remotely and then they were like, ooh, Richmond's cheaper. Right. So they all came down here.
Right.
And well, it's a cool city, you know, I mean, people, I mean, there's things to do. There's museums, there's all this. I had a friend who owned a house in the Fan pretty much on DCU campus. And he was like, well, I'm moving to DC because that's where my office is. And I'm renting my house out to 2 college students for probably over $2,000 a month, which was unheard of at the time. Now it's pretty common for a house of that to start. I mean, like 2 college students are going to be paying in the Fan, which is like not the most safe neighborhood, you know, VCU's there, but it's not the safest place. It's loud, you know. I live in the Fan. When I live in the Fan, my rent for a 2-bedroom was $5.95 a month.
Yeah.
So, you know, times are changing.
Times are changing and not necessarily for the good. So tell us a little bit about your background. You run your own business. And you said it's a coaching, kind of a coaching.
What coaching and consulting?
Give us a little more detail about the coaching.
Yeah, so I am a core energy coach. So what that means is I work with individuals on how their kind of how their perspective of the world around them is either inhibiting them or supporting them into reaching their goals. A lot of times when people have goals or they want to become a change jobs or something, it's their perspective that's holding them back. So I really coach around things like that. I coach leadership, executive directors. I work mostly with nonprofit organizations and government agencies, so leaders in that space. I've worked with a couple of politicians briefly, but most of what I do is I say, you know, what is your goal? And we're going to get there. And a lot of times it's tangibles, but it's also mindset. And what they're telling themselves. So I try to kind of challenge those things. And then my consulting side is strategic planning, implementation coaching. So you have this wonderful plan. Now you have to operationalize it. Now you have to get it moving because people love planning. They don't know how to do the doing part sometimes. And that's kind of where I step in. And I notice that coaching and strategic planning go hand in hand because if you're not able to kind of, especially for nonprofit mission driven organizations, because if you're not able to dream big, you're not going to be able to fulfill that mission.
That's right.
So that's most of what I do there. My background, I actually got started doing this by working on the ground, doing direct service for people with disabilities, helping them at work, helping them at school. I worked with people transitioning out of prison. I've worked with youth. I worked for Job Corps for a few years doing, helping them kind of attach to either a trade or education. So I always did this work. And what I started noticing was sometimes these really strict parameters that I had to stay in, the programmatic part of things, wasn't really serving the community that I was trying to help. It was very rigid. Things were very checking a box and moving on, but are you really helping that person? Are you really getting, it's the government, right? Or, you know, whoever is that in the ivory tower making these decisions. So I began wanting to kind of work with the decision makers and teaching or supporting them in understanding their communities and in community engagement and things like that. So that's when I started consulting, and I working with boards, working with executive directors, working with, and most of the time, individuals I work with, their hearts are in the right place, but some organizations weren't doing authentic community engagement in the sense that they're really able to see life through the people who they're trying to serve's eyes. We have this saying in the consulting world, well, not just consulting, but in the nonprofit world, it's called white savior complex, where it's like, you want to do this work, but you're not really listening to the people you're trying to help. There's been lots of examples over the system. There's one example that I use a lot, and it took place in, I can't remember what country it was, in Africa, but there was that shoe store, Zappos, and they were like, we're going to give everybody shoes because that's what we do. We want everybody to have shoes. And then it messed the economy up. because everybody had shoes all of a sudden, and they didn't have to go to the local people who did this. So it's like, if you knew that now, how would you have done it differently? Would you have supported the shoemakers instead of just like saying free shoes? So really understanding the community that individuals are wanting to do work and serve in an authentic way. That's kind of why I do what I do. And it's kind of morphed into leadership coaching, so people can be leaders in an authentic way, not just, we were talking about the trucking industry earlier, not just this like, nose to the grindstone, get it done type of leadership, but like actually like inclusive and encouraging and more productive, actually, if you really think about it. When people are happy to go to work, they are more productive leadership. So I wear a lot of different hats. And then the other, that's kind of gotten me into the civic work I designed a body of police accountability and transparency for the city of Richmond, along with a team. I co-chaired a task force. I'm happy to say, I know you don't have many local listeners, but if you do, the city of Richmond is accepting applications to be on the civilian review board, which is going to be overseeing incidents that happen by the police department in a more from a community standpoint, not just an internal affairs standpoint. So that's a huge win. And then I worked on RVA Green 2050, which is the huge strategic plan that hopefully is going to get Richmond to net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. So those are things that I kind of did extra besides my business and it's all kind of the same thing. It's all under the umbrella of what I do. Some of it's free. Some of it I get paid for. Sure. I just do what I do.
Well, as far as what you said local wise. So one of the things that I allow people to do is that, these little interviews that I do, whether it's somebody from the West Coast, I did an interview with a guy up in, Alberta, Canada, but you have the ability to grab this and use it for your own marketing, however it is you want to do, okay? So if you want to use this interview to get people to notice what you're doing and make awareness, I'm all about that. Spread this thing around the local community with all of your sources and do what you will with it, because that's the whole point of this. I don't sell anything, okay? I'm in the information business, period, okay? So wherever this information goes, who gets to use it, I leave it up to who's ever in on this. Like I told you before, I have a kind of a standing interview with a couple of friends that are out of state. And, we send this everywhere. So this podcast is broadcast around the world. And like you said, nobody in, nobody in Eastern Europe really cares what happens to Richmond, Virginia. Okay.
Well, it's interesting because
they're not really caring.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, you know, police oversight is unheard of in the United States.
True.
What happened in Richmond or what happened in the state of Virginia, and this can happen, this has happened in other states, is that there was legislation that came down. Our state senator patroned a bill, Ghazal Hashmi, who was one of my, she's amazing, that independent review bodies of civilians can have independent investigatory power and subpoena power of cases, but the locality has to be the one to adopt and to create what this looks like. Huh. So even though this isn't happening in every jurisdiction, other states have the possibility to do this.
Right.
So it's essentially overseeing, giving the police oversight, not policing the police, because you can't police the police, but right. you can hold accountability outside of internal affairs. And this is how we in the state of Richmond, I think Richmond, Virginia Beach, Fairfax, Arlington, maybe not Arlington, but I know there's at least three or four different jurisdictions who have created their own CRBs. So, you know, it's happening here. It's possible. I know New Orleans has one. I know, Charlottesville has one. I know New Orleans has one. I know Seattle, I think, has one. So it's kind of, it's starting to shift. And we talk about police reform. Yeah. Or defunding, you know, everybody hates that we're defunding the police. Cause it's like, it's not really defunding. It's reappropriating funds that are going to help the community instead of criminalizing the community.
Right.
I think that's really important for our listeners to understand that is, you know, when we talk about, so for instance, here in Richmond, the Parks and Rec had this, this problem of not being able to hire the police department is having an issue with hiring. We're about 150 officers short. So we don't have the capacity to be, you know, going to the parks and getting mad at the woman who lets her dog poop in the yard or in the park, you know, the capacity. So Parks and Rec people are like having to kind of monitor their parks. So what we did, what one of the city council people, Kristen Nye, she pushed through legislation or an ordinance that would, or she champions, I don't know if it was an ordinance or what, but they're now able to hire park rangers for the parks. Hmm. That is a perfect example. You don't need guns and mace
right.
at
right.
the parks unless it's an emergency, right?
Exactly.
So I talked to Kristen Nye a few months ago and I brought this up to her and I was like, this is what we mean. This is what, this is police. This is, defunding or reappropriating or police reform. And she goes, Angela, I didn't even think about that. I was just thinking we needed park rangers. And I'm like, well, you could put park rangers where you don't need to have cops. This Chesterfield, you're in the West End. So Chesterfield, what they have done is started hiring like cop assistants who don't have guns. They don't carry guns. And they're like, and it, the side of their car says, you know, police assistance or something right. like, I forgot what it says, yeah. but I'm like, this is the idea is that we don't need to bring a gun to a knife. Well, maybe to a knife fight, but you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
that militants that,
exactly.
that you don't need that in the mental health crisis. You don't need that. And you know, it should be an escalated thing. And it's just interesting to see how people don't want to really be police officers because of the bad rap that they get. And
yep.
people are, you know, people are coming here from other places to become cops in Richmond. And then once they get trained, they move because they don't want to be Richmond cops. So there's a whole bunch of different dynamics. My degree is in criminal justice. It was my first kind of passion. So is police reform. So, yeah.
Well, there's nothing wrong with that. And I can think of several places that this would be a really good thing. You know, I'm thinking Atlanta, Georgia, Austin, Texas, you know, they've all had bad publicity over what I call militarized police forces. And there's, you know, been a few other places too. So yeah, I think if that could take off and make a wave across the country, there'd be a whole lot of people that could sleep safer at night.
And I think that the byproduct of these CRBs isn't is accountability and transparency, but also healing that relationship between the police department and the community. So, you know, if any of my police department friends are going to listen to this, that's how I look at it, is there's a rift between the community and the police. And then there's part of the community who really likes the police, but they're not the ones that are being over policed either.
Right.
So this kind of community accountability is going to help things become healed after the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and how the police can be blamed for over incarceration of our communities, you know. So because police aren't trusted a lot of times, and it's depending on the community that you're in. And I think that that is for good reason, but also I think that we can move forward from that and reimagine what policing actually looks like, or what it should look like.
Right. I mean, we have to go back to the whole premise of it being a community thing rather than a militarized, you know, a quasi-military. I mean, you don't, you know, there's the worst thing you want to see is when you're having something going on is to have a bunch of guys show up in tactical gear coming right out of a Rambo movie, showing up at your front door. It just makes things worse.
Yes, absolutely. Especially if you're in crisis.
Yep.
You know, that's not the way. We have what is the law that was passed? Marcus Alert. Marcus Davis Peters was the gentleman who was a teacher, and he was murdered. And I'm going to say he was murdered because he was naked and he was in mental health crisis, and he was shot and killed by a police officer on the side of the road, on the side of the highway. And it's like, the Marcus Alert is mental health crisis, a person that's not an armed and uniformed police officer needs to show up in order to not exasperate the situation.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. We could use a lot more of that. So hopefully we can make that happen. You know, give it a little time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, so you mentioned something earlier about you're pushing are you actively trying to get on the school board?
Yes, I am running for school board. I do so many things, sometimes it's hard for me to keep up. But school board is one of my biggest focuses right now. So I'm in the 4th district in the city of Richmond. This is my first time running for any political office. And it's interesting to me because I'm not a politician. And to me, the school board is an elected official should be on the school board. I don't know if you know, but Hanover County, they just appoint each other and it's a big mess. It's a big good old boys club and it doesn't work. So I still have to act, you know, fit the mold of a politician, but I don't feel as though I am. I've served my community in many different capacities and I want to continue doing that. But the politics piece is difficult. The getting endorsements from people who don't really know me, and the money piece, and I'm not really part of the Richmond Dems or anything like that. The Richmond Democrat, like I'm not affiliated with any sort of PAC or anything like that. So, and I don't know if I want to be, but at the same time, I want to serve in this capacity. The good problem is that I'm running against two very viable candidates. So, the 4th district has a tough decision to make, but also I'm not the kind of person that's going to start throwing dirt at the other person. Like community members, I believe my community are smart, intelligent people. They can make their decision without me throwing other people under the bus. And really, I have nothing to, you know, say. I will say that to that end, I will say that I want to serve on the school board as long as it takes to get the school board functioning in a way that I'm happy with, that the community is happy with. Yeah. I do have a feeling that another person I'm running against is kind of using it as a stepping stone. Other than that, they're great, you know? And everybody uses the school board as a stepping stone, which is probably part of the reason why it's so dysfunctional is because we're not actually here. Yeah. We're thinking about our next step.
Yeah.
And I don't want that to be what happens.
I look at any kind of, you know, you want to put yourself out there for a elective, you know, an election of some sort. You want to be an elected official, period. Mm-hmm. So treat it like a job interview. Okay. Mm-hmm. I tell people this all the time. You want to be an elected official. I don't care if it's school board, state senator, district, whatever. Okay. you need to treat it like a job interview. The people interviewing you are the people who are going to be voting for you. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the bottom line. You are setting yourself up with your resume and your bona fides to the people that you want to get to vote for you for this job. So treat it like a job interview, mm-hmm. not like you, it's a shoe in and you're just looking to get a leg up. I'm sorry. Right. You know, you don't have the job yet, son. Okay. Stand down.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I'm always in my community talking to people, listening to knocking on doors. When I was getting signatures, I have to admit it's been way too hot to knock on doors. I have not been doing it. But I am setting up a virtual kind of drop-in meeting where people who are interested can just drop in and chat with me virtually, so we don't have to be out in the heat. I'm not wasting your air conditioning by your door being wide open. And then once it cools down again, I will start kind of going out and meeting people. But I'm trying to think of like newer ways and more accessible ways for me to be able to engage with people, and Zoom is one of those things. That's what I've been working on. And my son's been home from school for the last, or from camp today and yesterday. So I had him, he loves stickers. So I put him to work and I had him put stickers, the stamps on all of the envelopes that I'm mailing out to my constituents yesterday. So you got to be innovative, you know?
That's right. You do. You do. You got to make things work for you. And sometimes old school is good school. Okay?
Absolutely. You know, absolutely.
Throwing letters in the mail. Like you said, you can't really knock on doors in this weather. So mailing, you know, doing mailers, you know, Zoom meetings are all, it's all well and great if your constituency, everybody has a computer. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, this is the one thing that I found out back in 2020, when everything shut down for the pandemic, they closed the schools, sent all the kids home. And at the time, well, I mean, I still am, but I was very active in the local American Legion unit out there. Where I was living in Texas. So being an IT technician, I threw my pro bono services out there. I said, if there's any school kids out there in my community that don't have computers because their parents can't afford them, I said, I have a way to refurbish some for you. I know where to get them from. I cleaned up a bunch of them and passed them out. You know, and when in a couple of cases, helped the mommies install them for the kids so they could do the schoolwork, you know, and it was all part of the, you know, what I call community service and, you know, but it's old school stuff. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Getting the tools into the hands that need them. And in your case, you know, you're doing a good job working with what you have, trying not to, you know, trying really hard not to, you know, get people all uptight. Well, why you hold my door open? All my AC is getting out.
People have invited me in their house too, which I was very surprised. Which is really nice. A couple of my neighbors were like, come on in. And I'm like, okay. Because, you know, back 20, 30 years ago, it was normal to knock on people's doors. Right. Now it's like, what are you selling me? What do you want from me? So it's a little bit more unnerving to kind of go out now. Right. But also, I think you bring up a great point. Accessibility is key, and not everybody is going to have. So there's people who aren't going to be able to meet in person because they have children or because they are tired at the end of the day. Hopping on a 30-minute Zoom call is going to be way better for them. But then also, I'm planning on doing some in-person things at the local schools, and people, the community members, can come in person. And then hopefully the folks, you know, that can't reach me any other way, they can email me or what have you. I'm pretty accessible. My phone number is on the internet. So if they want to text me, they most certainly can, but I'm really looking forward to engaging more and getting out there.
Well, that's going to be your biggest thing, is touching base with as many people as possible. Let them get to know who you are and what you stand for. Because so many politicians, you know, they, these days, they don't care about the people that are voting for them. They think they're a shoe-in, so they take them for granted, and they don't get out there and meet the people. And then they just automatically think, all right, I'm a Democrat, I'm a Republican, these people are going to automatically vote for me.
You know, you say that, because I've been asked, like, are you a Democrat or Republican? And I'm like, this is a nonpartisan position. I'm neither.
Yeah,
there you go. And that's how I answer the question, because I don't want this is the school board. This shouldn't be a partisan, a partisan position. And I'll say I'm an independent and I always have been, even though I rarely vote Republican. I still will not, you know, I just will not attach to one or the other. I think that it can be very divisive. And I don't want people to see me just for, you know, are you red or blue? So that's interesting.
You know, people ask me, you know, if I'm a Democrat or Republican. I said, I'm neither. I vote for whoever I think is going to do the best job.
Right.
Period.
Yeah.
It's a job interview. Okay.
I'm sorry. I was in CVS the other day and I was waiting. I was with my son and I was waiting for a prescription and I'm kind of my arms around my kid. He's six, so he's small. And a woman was behind me and she stops me and she says, Angela, she's like, well, she didn't know my name. She's like, I remember when my kids were that age, you know, and she starts reminiscing. And I was like, oh, my name's Angela Fontaine. I'm running for school board in the 4th district. And her eyes like lit up and she was like, oh, that's so great to hear. Cause I'm the only mom running. I'm the only parent that has a kid in the school system. Mm. And she just seemed really excited about it. And then she immediately went home, found me, made a donation on my website, signed up to have a yard sign put in her yard. And it just was like that one interaction, that one lady, we were just waiting for our prescriptions in line. That's the kind of like organic community. Like I love that kind of community engagement because we're all just out doing our day-to-day things. She sees me being a mom and now I have a supporter and it might not be as many as the person running against me who has $60,000 for some reason in a school board race. And, you know, I might not have as many supporters as him, but I'm also not, you know, I'm also on the ground doing this like very organic work. And he's been in politics for much longer than I have. So people that's probably know who he from. Is. That's where, yes. Yes. But like I said, two really great people. I'm actually having lunch with Wesley Hedgepeth today. He's the other person running. We're the same exact age. We actually kind of grew up together. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to go through this process without there being a person who is staunchly different than you. Right. Because usually we're used to, you know, the presidential race where it's like Republican, Democrat, and just this constantly, right? People banging heads constantly. And it's not like that. RVA Dirt, I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they are a blog, a website that kind of calls out Richmond who's who, like politicians, and they talk about what's happening in school board, what happening in city council. They're a great blog website. They also have a Twitter page, but they've been sending all the city council, mayor, and school board candidates weekly questions. And me and Wesley and Garrett have been answering them. And it's funny because we're answering them very similarly. So it's like, how are we going to make a decision? You know, it's a good problem to have because I'm certainly not that kind of person who wants to go out and like stomp on my opponents. I'm competitive, but not in a way that's like visceral, if that makes sense.
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I've always been a believer that you want, you know, if you want to do nice things, put the honey out. Okay. You know, you stomp on people, you're going to get some people that'll follow you, but you're not going to get as many as you would otherwise.
And you lose respect, I think, too. You know, I mean, I would lose respect for myself if that's how I ran a campaign. Yeah. You know, I'm not talking about my good things. I'm just kind of talking about other people's bad things. Like that's not, hi. My son just popped in, but he ran back out, so we're good.
Okay. All right. No worries. No worries. No, we're all set. So I'm glad to hear that you're doing all that stuff.
Thank you.
So I had a couple other questions, but you kind of answered them. And one of them I'm not even going to touch. I had an interview with a guy a couple of weeks ago from the West Coast. Mm-hmm. And he caught me by surprise. I'm like you. I'm pretty honest. I try to stay true to myself. And this guy, you know, the only reason I agreed to the interview was because he was a military veteran. And I thought that's what we were going to talk about. But no. He's an educator. Okay. Got a PhD in education or something. I don't know. We didn't even get to that part. All he wanted to talk about was, you know, doing everything he could to eliminate all mention of CRT in the national public school systems. And I'm like, okay, no, wait, you know. That's a really dodgy deal.
Well, what my question is, what does he mean by CRT? Does he mean Black history? Because I've heard some people get the two confused, right? CRT is not taught in secondary, in elementary school, middle school, high school, most anywhere, colleges, unless you're right. So what is the big hoopla about CRT? If you're taking a class that is, if you're in, you know, an American history class or African American history class or something, maybe you would, I don't know what the major would be where you would take that class, but also those might be private schools. Like you can't eliminate something that's not happening. So what my assumption is, he's talking about eliminating books about Harriet Tubman or eliminating books about Martin Luther King, which is not CRT.
Yeah, exactly. I got the impression that, He went off the deep end with all this stuff in a lot of ways, and it threw me. I didn't want to ruin everything and get into what I call a contest with him. I just let it go. But then I felt so uncomfortable with it. I just posted a disclaimer saying, I don't agree with this guy. Okay. Listen to him all you want to, but I don't agree with this guy. You know, you don't go around calling, educators in schools Marxists because they're teaching world history classes that might mention CRT in it. I'm like, sorry, you can't just wipe that stuff out of all the textbooks.
Interesting. He has a PhD in education. You would think that education is, knowing all of the everything, right?
What got my attention when she started calling people Marxist, I'm like, okay, whoa, okay, wait a minute, step back. You know, that bothered
interesting.
Me. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, that's what I said. Interesting. So, it's like anything else. you run into some stuff. So I'm gonna we're gonna close up shop here. Okay. I'm gonna let you get about, take care of your son and your other interviews. So if you got anything else that you want to tell anybody about what you're doing?
So not about what I'm doing, but I think that what you're doing is awesome. I think that the more people kind of connect with each other on a community level, the better. We get so much information from these big, conglomerates, news sources, but really getting information from each other. And that's not that that's not a good place to get information, but it's like both, right? So spreading information, understanding that just because something's not in your local paper, it's not really happening. It doesn't mean it's not happening. I think that that's really important. Community, like you mentioned earlier, is everything. Communities they should be given platforms to make more decisions for themselves instead of this top-down approach that comes from, the ivory towers or these big boardrooms. So while I am I'm running for political office, I don't consider myself a politician.
That's probably a good thing.
I'm trying my best to do this through the community, not to the community. And that's my approach. So I appreciate you having me here.
I appreciate that. And the thing is, what you said, that's becoming more and more important, and it's going to become more important as we go forward. So if you step out from the broader view, step back away from Richmond in itself and look at the United States as a whole right now. And I have published several essays, monologue essays about the failing empire of the United States. Okay. I say that is because my friends and I, we talk about this every weekend in our other show, and we look at our neighborhoods like here. I talk a little bit about what's going on here in Central Virginia. My friend talks about what's happening down where he's at in Florida, and our friend up in Connecticut, she lives in a different environment up there, and what's going on in her community is a lot different than ours. But it all boils down to the same thing. We're noticing that things are starting to fail around us. From the broader picture. I mean, look at what's going on right now with just this last week. Okay. And, everybody knows what's going on in the news, but at the same time, my friend and I are, you know, my friend Mitch and I down in Florida are big news hounds. We scour the news left and right, but we don't touch what we call American mainstream news. Okay. Mm-hmm. We get all our sources from independent journalists. I get most of my stuff from outside the country. And what they paint as far as news goes is totally different than what you're going to get from ABC, CBS, and CNN, and all the rest of them. So we talk about that. Okay. And how that's having a big effect on things. So, you know, I want to get perspectives from local folks. You know, you just happen to be in my backyard, which is a good thing.
It's interesting.
You know, it's a kind of a cool thing. But at the same time, I'm also poking into other people's backyards around the country and saying, hey, you know, what's going on in your neighborhood?
I want to say one more thing before we close is that we only have so much capacity in our brains to take in information. So, you know, if we're sitting around watching CNN and Fox News all day, are we paying attention to what's happening on the local level? Nope. So have some self-awareness around that piece and get your news where you get your news, but also remember that this is what's happening today is not normal. No. It's crazy. And we have to remember that we only have so much brain capacity and we only have so much ability to take in all of this horrible news that we're seeing. So sometimes attaching to what's happening on your local papers is going to say, give you that like, oh, wait, you know, things are going okay here in my little bubble. Maybe I should pay attention to that a little bit more for a couple of weeks because I'm starting to go crazy.
Yep. And there's a lot of truth to that. There's a lot of truth to that. Yeah. That's good advice.
Awesome.
I think we should pass that on to everybody. Okay. So I appreciate you coming on the show today. I really do. It's like a ray of sunshine, truthfully. That's a good thing.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I wish you good luck in your election. You know, if you want to, you've got my email address. If you want to kind of shoot me out once in a while, let me know how you're doing. I don't have a problem passing that on.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks so much. I appreciate that, Terrence.
Okay. Well, very good. All right. Well, I'm going to let you go.
All right.
Again, I appreciate you coming on and we'll go from there. Good luck.
All right. Take care. Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. So as I said, we're going to say goodbye today. Appreciate everybody tuning in and we'll be back next week with something different. This segment will air and next week, and you get to watch this and see how local doing. If you if you're part of a local community and you need to be part, you know, get involved with that, because I'm telling you, things are starting to come apart. And you know, don't rest on your laurels. Take care of yourselves. And if you don't, so with that, I'll say goodbye and I'll see you next week. Sláinte. While I still have your attention, I want to tell you about how you can support this podcast and my efforts in general. This podcast will continue to remain free to subscribe to on all the major mobile podcast apps, on my YouTube channel, Crown of Biha, and for the first 30 days on my Substack page, Crown of Biha, the Tree of Life at Substack.com. With that in mind, I'm asking for donations of any amount. I decided that I would rather ask for donations instead of charging subscriptions, so everyone has an opportunity to watch or listen to this podcast everywhere in the world. All I'm asking for is help in defraying the cost to produce and distribute this podcast and maintain my website. I've set up a donation tab on the Village Oak Tree webpage at rss.com and a donation page on my website at www.crownofbiha.com, which are all linked to PayPal for your security. This way you can use any currency you wish from around the world, providing PayPal is available to you. Any amounts appreciated. Now, about my website. The easiest way to find it is to copy it from the background behind me if you're watching this video. If you're listening to an audio version, copy the website name from the podcast logo shown. Search for it and enjoy your visit. Lastly, I'm trying to sell some copies of my book, Fugitives in the New United States, which can be found at major book retailers around the world, such as Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Lulu. You can also buy from me direct through the bookstore page on my website. Fugitives in the New United States is available in hardcover, paperback, and digital form. Free if you're a Kindle subscriber. It's written for young adults and older, so it's safe. this were a movie, it'd be rated PG. Look for Fugitives in the New United States at your favorite book retailer and enjoy it. I sell enough, I'll find the time to write the second book in this series. So I want to thank you for your support, even if it's just a like and a subscribe on my social media accounts. Thank you for listening to the show today. I hope you enjoyed it and you'll return again for another episode of the Village Oak Tree. Please like, subscribe, and reply on the YouTube videos or the audio podcast where that's available. This helps with spreading the word about what I'm trying to do, like so many others, which is to shout about all the bad things our governments are doing to us all over the world. If enough of us decide that we don't want to take it anymore, we can force the governments to do right by us as we elected them to do. As I say goodbye this week, I wish to leave you with this Irish blessing as you go about your day. May your hand always be stretched out in friendship and never in want. Slán go fóill.